trends come and go. We want these books to have long lives. A long life is important for most books, and I don't want it to look dated when the interior contents are still relevant. So, you know, if there's a new technology available and it's relevant for the book, yes, we're going to take advantage of it. We love matte finished books, and that became a trend a few years back. We love it, but it's not right for everything. We love to emboss. We love, you know, we're artists. We like the little bells and whistles, but we only want to use them when it makes sense for the book.
That's Tammy Dever of TLC Book Design. I spoke with Tammy during IBPA's Publishing University 2018 in Austin, Texas. What did we talk about? Well, we talked about book design, a critical factor in making your book a success, even if you're just working in ebooks and not pbooks. We'll hear the whole conversation in just a few minutes. But first, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing. Thanks again for streaming in. I'm an independent publisher, and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Inside Independent Publishing comes to you from IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. IBPA's mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, education, and tools for success. For more about IBPA and how it can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. Right now, I'd like to take up one of your questions on publishing. This is from H. Monteith at Sin Ren Press and asks, what is the best way to attract authors? We are a startup publisher and are wondering about the best way to attract new authors, get some new submissions coming in. Where should a new publisher list? First Writer and Writer's Market, and where else? Any advice about getting our existence out there would be great. Well, thank you very much for that question. Here are a couple ideas. Number one, contact all the websites and blogs that are in your interest area. Tell them you're looking for authors. Number two, develop a rich community of contacts among writers and reviewers. Number three, be sure to create submissions guidelines and make them easily accessible via your website and via a PDF downloadable file. Number four, be very clear about what you're looking for and what you're not looking for. If you don't want poetry, science fiction, how-to books, say so. Number five, check lists of literary agents and book doctors who may have titles available. Note that if you have no track record or are not offering much money up front, well, agents probably won't be so interested. But in addition, the IBPA staff have an even better suggestion, and their note reads, we recently ran an article in our monthly magazine, IBPA Independent, on a company called authors.me. You might want to check them out. And then gives a long URL. I will list that URL in the notes to the podcast, so check there to get it if you don't want to write it down now. Thanks for your questions, and if you have a question for me or for anyone at IBPA, just contact us on the IBPA site, which is ibpa-online.org, or message us on Twitter using the handle at IBPA. Be sure to put the word podcast in your message so that your question gets to the right place. In early April, as I mentioned above, in early April of 2018, I attended IBPA's annual Publishing University, which was held in Austin, Texas. Fabulous day and a half, full of publishing information, experts, etc. And while there, I was able to speak to nearly a dozen publishing industry leaders, and today's podcast features one of them, Tammy Dever. I am again here at PubU 2018 in Austin, Texas, and my guest today is Tammy Dever. She is the owner and creative director of TLC Book Design, which you can find at the obvious address, tlcbookdesign.com. A book designer and, I guess, a longtime member of IBPA?
Absolutely. Yes. Many, many years.
Many, many years. So tell me a little bit about TLC Book Design and what you do.
So we've been known by most people as TLC Graphics. This is the first year that we've launched our new name. So if you've heard of us as TLC Graphics, we're still here and just have that new name going on. We wanted to make sure that people truly understood when they heard about us that we are all about books. We began as a design firm, and we've grown into coaching people and taking people from a raw manuscript through design, editorial, printing, and beyond. We really value the relationship we have with our clients, and that's one thing that very much sets us apart, is anybody who works with us becomes part of the TLC family forever.
And when you have a client come in, I guess you ask them obvious questions. What is your book? Who is it for? What kind of feeling are you trying to get across? What are the design choices that might be appropriate for your book? I assume you get your author's feedback and then you
we do
think about it.
Absolutely. You know. So we have a questionnaire that we start out with, and of course an interview if we can't see them in person, which is most people. Then we have extensive phone interview. We get to know each other even on a more personal basis, so I can get their personality and their feel. And then we want to know, you know, what writers are your competition? What books will be the competition for your book? None is never the appropriate answer, and we do get that from new people especially.
My book is unique.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what we always strive to tell people is that, yes, your book is unique, but people always have a choice. They can buy another book. So there are books out there that are similar to yours. Why is yours unique?
Mm-hmm.
So we will look up all their competition. We want to know who their readers are. If their readers and their buyers are different, which happens often in the gift books and, of course, in children's books. So we make them think.
Uh-huh.
We want to know what design styles they like and don't like.
Right.
What they like and what's appropriate for their book may not gel. But our goal is to give them a cover that works within their genre, stands out against the competition, and something that they're proud to represent that they like. So it's a challenge, but we love it.
And generally, at what stage in the production or the writing of the book do authors come to you, and what stage do you think they ought to come to you?
Well, they often come when they're done writing, and that's fine. We wish they come before they're finished with their first draft, when they're pretty far through. But if they're just looking for design, we can start at almost any stage. They've got to have a title, and sometimes when you're still writing it, you don't know your final title. We've coached authors through really nasty titles into coming up with that real true gem, so we can help with that. But the best time, I think, is when you're almost done with your first draft. When you've written, you know you have to go through it again. There's time to think. There's time for us to coach you through the whole process. You know, this is what it's going to take to get your book into print. Now that you're this far, you know your story, you know your book, let's set up a plan to move forward. Now, we're often booked 3 or 4 months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to us and you're ready to start right away,
you might not be able to.
You may get lucky and we may be able to fit you in, or you may have to wait. And we don't like to make people wait.
Uh-huh.
So that's one reason why we prefer you not wait until you're rearing to go, but we'll help you set up a schedule. It often takes 3 to 4 months to produce the book and get it ready for press. We take our time, but we're not slow.
And do you do cover design as well as interior design?
Yes, we do both. Some firms specialize in one or the other.
Right.
We have a core group of 3 designers, and we're all good at all of that, but each of us has our specialty,
right?
Whether it's a different genre, or some of them are better than interiors and others are better at covers.
Right.
So we really bring a great diversity in our design skills and the genres that we're better at.
So let's talk a bit about cover design and about interior design, because they're quite different things. And like, as you were saying, some people are better at one than the other, or prefer one over the other. The interior is where you're presenting your content, so you have to convey a message communicating it.
Mm-hmm.
The assumption is, in most cases, people have already bought the book, but not necessarily. If someone's in a bookstore and they open it up, you want it to look professional and presentable. The cover, of course, is basically a marketing tool or a selling tool, so it has a lot more items on the list that it has to check off. So let's just talk about them. A little bit. Let's start with interior design, because I think maybe people don't talk enough about that.
People talk
about cover designs a lot.
So something that most people don't realize, you know, everybody knows, cover sells the book.
Right.
They know that your cover has to attract attention within a few seconds. What a lot of people don't realize is that the front cover is your book's billboard. If you see the spine first, it's kind of a mini billboard that makes you turn over to the front cover. You get the billboard, you flip it over to the back, and that's your book's advertisement. So just as you said, all parts of that cover, they're marketing tools. The guts, that back cover is supposed to draw you into the interior. The interior is what drives most people to the cash register. And that's a shock to a lot of people. But if that interior doesn't look readable, doesn't look inviting, isn't branded to match the cover, most people are going to close it up and pick up the next book.
And maybe not even understand why they're doing it.
Exactly.
It's a very subliminal effect that the interior design has. It can say professional, intellectual, creative, organized, readable. I mean, all those things, people get that in a moment's glance.
Sure. And it can say all of the opposite.
Right, right. And it requires a lot of finesse, I think, to get an interior design to look good. I know that there are a number of online book production companies that say, just give us your MS Word file in Times Roman. Here's an A head, a B head. And yeah, that'll sort of work. I mean, it won't stand out, and it won't necessarily be the best choice for your book. When it comes to interior design, one trend that I've noticed in my own publishing business is that there's a lot of resistance now to long chapters. And if you have a long chapter, which may be the case, they want A heads, they want B heads. You know, readers want stuff broken up. I would say that's kind of a trend. Are there any other developments in the world of interior book design and typography that you've noticed or latched onto?
We tend not to latch onto too many trends.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty traditional.
How would you define traditional?
We love good typography. We love good design. So I don't think good typography and good design can always be trendy. I don't think it's always old-fashioned. I think if you have good design and good typography, that means you're using space properly. That means you're leading people on their journey through a book. There's a purpose to everything that's done in the interior. So we want our interiors to be beautiful, not necessarily pretty, but to be branded with a cover, to be either exciting or interesting, you know, depending on the type of book we're using. But the first thing we need to do is make it readable. And I know a lot of designers get all crazy with the design and forget it needs to be readable, or they just kind of crank it out in a standard font and a standard size with standard margins and don't do anything to make it more interesting. And it's our job to make to give the reader a great experience. They're already hopefully enjoying the words and what they're learning. Most people don't realize we're giving them an experience unless it's a bad one. You know, it's hard to read. The margins are tiny.
Right.
Even the width of the line of type, if it's too long, your eyes get tired.
That's right.
You lose track of it. So we have to watch so many things, the spacing between the lines. There's all kinds of technical terms for this stuff. But we want it to be very obvious that a new chapter is a new chapter. And we have lots of before and examples on our website that show the difference between a more generic or less cared for design and something
running
that's
heads
thought out.
Are, say, thoughtfully selected. Should it
yes.
be the title of the book and the title of the chapter? Should it be the chapter title and an A head? And if so, you know, how are those arranged on the page?
True. We're very traditional when it comes to the running heads.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite typefaces?
We tend to use Esprit quite a bit.
What is it?
Esprit. It's an ITC.
Esprit, right? Yeah.
ITC. We like Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, within our group, each of us has different favorites for different reasons. I think it's somewhat of a personality.
Sure,
But they're all readable,
mm-hmm.
and we need to match that typeface with the style of writing and with the topic of the book.
No long passages in all cap italic.
Then. Oh, goodness. Underlined and bolded,
right,
too.
Right, right.
No, yeah. There's no underlines.
So when you're working with an author, and presumably they're working in Microsoft Word, because 99% of the people do, for all the bad things you say about Word, it's actually a great tool for preparing manuscripts and sharing it, et cetera. And it feeds directly. Do you work in InDesign?
We do.
So it feeds Word. If you set it up properly, it feeds nicely into InDesign, mm-hmm. where you can then work. And presumably, if the author sets it up in Word correctly, it can save you a lot of time bringing it into... I'm sorry, if they set it up in Word, you can save you a mm-hmm. lot of time in InDesign. Do you coach authors on how to prepare manuscripts in Word to make your life easier on the other end?
We do if we catch them in time. That's right. Another reason why if they come to us with a first draft or as they're writing, that we can do that and save everybody time. And especially if you're doing a nonfiction book with a lot of levels of heads and yeah. things like that, then it's not only saving time, it's assuring that we're getting their message through
right.
properly.
So you're getting the hierarchies, right?
Right. Yeah. We know that this is a level 2 subhead. We
right.
know that these are supposed to be bullets. We know that this is a chapter head, because we do encourage our authors not to over-format mm-hmm. their
right.
manuscripts. We don't
right.
need you to make it look pretty in
right.
Word. It needs to be functional.
Right.
We will open it and see what you've done in Word, but it imports into our program.
Right.
And it looks different
yeah.
when we bring it in.
Yeah, you don't really care what it looks like in Word
no.
as long as the hierarchies are established.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have double returns. You don't use tabs for indents. There's all this. And it's not a long list. It's just if you do it like this, it's going to make things easier.
Right.
Does it surprise you as it does me, and you don't have to answer this question, that there are very few professional writers who really understand how to use Microsoft Word as a professional writing tool?
In a way, but we've worked with so many first-time authors, and a lot of them, I mean, how could they know?
How could they know?
You know,
right.
I can't expect them to have known this software their whole life. I don't know how to use Word. I've never been trained in it.
Mm-hmm.
I own it. I use it as much as little as I
right,
need to.
Right.
You know, so they often know it much better than I do.
Yeah.
But because we work with a lot of first-timers, I don't usually anticipate that they know a lot about it. I usually expect that they know more than I do.
Well, let's talk about covers a little bit then. You said before that you're not particularly trendy. I think there are trends in cover design that you certainly see the mass marketers taking advantage
sure.
of. Maybe there's trends actually in cover production, you know, whether you're using emboss type or
mm-hmm.
metallic or fifth color or all that sort of stuff. Do you pay attention to any of that, or do you pretty much focus on what this book is and what it has to be for its own content?
We don't want to be trendy to be trendy.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we've found that what we've created, because it's what the author or what the book needed, tends to fit into a trend. But trends come and go.
Right.
We want these books to have long lives. A long life is important for most books, and I don't want it to look dated when the interior contents are still relevant. So, you know, if there's a new technology available and it's relevant for the book, yes, we're going to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
We love matte finished books, and that became a trend a few years back. Everybody was going matte. We love it, but it's not right for everything. We love to emboss. We love, you know, we're artists. We like the little bells and whistles, but we only want to use them when it makes sense for
right.
the book.
I remember when a new release of Photoshop came out with a particular thing that you could do, is like making a window and scaling it back so you could have like type over an image without having to reverse it out necessarily. That suddenly you'd see that everywhere because it was this new toy that
sure.
designers could play with. But then, like you say, it's it gets old and it gets passe. And
well, it does, and it gets
overdone, yeah.
and it gets kind of self-published looking. That happened with drop shadows.
Ah,
oh,
yeah.
Well, suddenly we can add shadows to everything, and they work
yeah.
when you need them to,
yeah.
but if not, everybody's doing them just because they can.
Right, and back in the day, of course, it was very difficult to do those. And
it was.
When it became
just press a button to get a drop shadow. It's like, oh, well, I'm definitely going to do that. I've been wanting to do this my whole life,
right?
So now I can do it. What are some mistakes that you see in book cover design? And I'm not even going to say in indie book cover design, because I think the big publishers make the same mistakes too. More egregious, perhaps, and probably a lot more expensive, because they really have a lot of money at stake in these things. What are some of the common things that you see that make you go, oh, God, they shouldn't have done that?
You know, there are objective things that need to happen to have a good cover, and then there's a whole lot of subjectivity, too. There's five basic ways of using design in covers, and you have the use of typography. We see too many typefaces on a cover, and it gets very jumbled looking. We see type that's either far too big or too small for the purpose of either the title, the subtitle. Perhaps the title and the subtitle and the author's name are all the same size. Well, size is supposed to tell you what's more important. Mm-hmm. So then we have the whole thing of size matters. Well, with type and with the graphics, it absolutely matters. Something's really small, it's less important. If something's really big, it's more important. You have to tell people this. You're telling them subconsciously about your book. We have space. This is a big deal. Margins are inside and out. The margins are such a big deal. And you're either, the author's name is too close to the bottom of the book, and it might get cut off. Or there's kind of a two-part title and then a separate subtitle. Well, the two parts of the title I've seen spaced out too far apart, and you're reading it and don't realize that that's supposed to be all one entity. A lot of things like that. Too many objects on the page. We see that an awful lot. Everybody wants to cram everything about their book on the cover.
Right.
I don't want you to tell me the whole story. I want you to give me a glimpse into it. Be intriguing. That happens a lot with self-published novels. People come to us and always want us to tell the entire story. There's
right.
like 20
the wrong people chip, the newspaper headline, the back of the mysterious figure in the alleyway, all that stuff.
Yep, yeah. And there's some little detail on the ground, and yeah, 10 things, and words, like, well, and they have to be holding a sign that says this. Like, you don't want words on your cover unless it's the title, the subtitle, the author, or you're going to compete. So let's see, we went through size, type, color matters, my goodness. Color can tell you a lot in a heartbeat. And one thing that I know a lot of people lose track of is that color means different things in different cultures. So in China, blue is a color for girls. And in the U.S., blue is the boy color. Mm-hmm. So we need to be really conscious. Are you going to try to sell your book in another country too? Because we want to make sure we're not giving the wrong message in that country, or do we need two different covers, things like that.
I used to work in Japan and work with a lot of Japanese designers, and they once came up with an art book that was about a very serious medieval form of art, but it was done in an orange and black theme, so it made it look like Halloween. And they had no idea that those two colors together, because it was exactly the jack-o'-lantern orange.
Wow.
You know, the rich black. And it was, you know, it's pretty, but it's like, well, we're not going to put this in a kid's bag.
No kidding.
You know, wow. Stuff like that.
Well, the last thing I didn't touch on is just that image matters. And there are nuances that we sometimes expect our authors to be able to tell us more about. We're not experts in their field. They are, which is why it's really important to have a good relationship with your designer. We did a lot of work for an autism-based publisher, and I knew something about it, but we needed to know more. And one thing with people on the autism spectrum is that they have a hard time making eye contact with people. So all of the images on the covers we would do for them, we had to make sure they weren't looking directly at the reader. But we wanted them to look toward the reader because they need to engage with you, but we didn't want to make that mistake because the people buying those books know that. And they would look at it and they say,
So where did you get that insight from? Was that from talking to the author or from personal experience?
A little bit. You know, I think as a designer, you have to be curious to learn. And we have to have that relationship with our publishers, with our authors, to say, what can you tell me about this topic that visually would be a no-no or is very important?
That's a great point. There's so many images that trigger things in different populations, and you really have to be aware of that. I mean, sometimes it's okay to do that. Maybe you want to provoke someone intentionally, but you have to know what effect is going to have and not get embarrassed by, you know, someone pointing out something to you after it's too late.
Well, I'm a horse freak, and I have been my whole life, and I can't stand seeing a horse book, and I'm like, well, that could never happen, and the saddle is the wrong kind of saddle for this story, and you know, so.
But that's important.
It is, and it'll turn away a lot of your readers. Like, I won't buy a book if it's like that. Then the author probably doesn't know what they're writing about. In fact, it might have just been an error on the designer and publisher's side, and the author could potentially have not even had a say in what happened on the cover. So we have a responsibility to the author and to the reader to do our jobs well.
That is really great information. I really appreciate you coming by today. Tammy Dever from TLCBookDesign.com. If you have a book in process and you're looking for a great cover, thoughtfully designed, with appropriate type inside and out, why don't you try and give Tammy Dever a call? So thank you very much for coming by, Tammy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate it as well.
Tammy had some really interesting observations on book design, especially talking about the five elements of cover design, which are size, type, color, image, space. Now, getting any one of those elements wrong is enough to mess up the total balance, and that's why you hire a professional rather than attempting to do it yourself. Do we all agree on that? You know, but in the end, you are the customer. You're the one that's paying the designer. You get the final okay, and you have to sign off. So how do you know that the design is right if you're not a design professional? Do you just accept the fact that the designer is getting paid and therefore knows what he or she is doing? Should you try to manage the project in some way? Would you feel comfortable saying, no, I don't like it, to a design professional? This is a bit complicated. You know, as Tammy says, the designer you hire should be asking you lots of questions about your intent, your taste, your audience, your goal, and if they are intuitive and listening and experienced, chances are you will be happy with what they come up with. But, you know, you don't need to be entirely passive. You can develop an eye for good design. Start by going to a bookstore and look at all the books, genre by genre. Do you notice how the mysteries are different from the romances, are different from the current affairs, are different from the business books? What do these different genres have in common design-wise? And why do you think that's the case? Why do those designers who are working in those genres generally always choose to go the way they go? And then look at the typefaces you see on the book jackets. Notice what things get set in large type. What gets set in small type? Is the type centered or flush? Left or right? Is it mixed? Where does the author's name usually go? This is just an idea of some of the dozens of things to look at. The point is that over time, you, even though you're not a designer, you can develop an appreciation for good design. You don't have to be able to produce it, really, to be able to judge it. It's very important that you understand what you're paying for and that you can know whether it's a good fit for your book and its audience. Don't be scared to have an opinion and make judgments, because believe me, the buyers in bookstores surely will. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, please tweet to me. Use the handle @PeterGoodman or @IBPA. Just a reminder, if you're already a member of IBPA, we really appreciate your support. Be sure and let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. Thanks again for listening to Inside Independent Publishing. Keep your nose in that book, and as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.